And finally, given its asymmetric return distribution, I believe it is more risky to have zero exposure to Bitcoin than it is to have a 5% portfolio weight. If you are not long Bitcoin, you are irresponsibly short. Don't overthink this. Lower your time preference. Bitcoin is the purest form of monetary energy and is portfolio insurance for all fixed income investors. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. This is Bitcoin Audible, the best in Bitcoin made audible, and I am Guy Swan, your host and the narrator of all things Bitcoin. We are concluding the incredible report with the real spicy sections in part 3 and 4 of Greg Foss's report, Why Every Fixed Income Investor Needs to Consider Bitcoin as Portfolio Insurance. That's a hell of a title. There is a lot to unpack in this one, and I want to jump right in. If you haven't listened to yesterday's episode of the first half of this report, stop now, go get caught up, then come back here. It is important groundwork laid for this to have maximum impact, and this half in particular is just great. I love it. So with that, a thanks to our amazing sponsors real quick, the safe, simple hardware wallet, Bitbox O2, the best Bitcoin conference in the universe, Bitcoin 2022, that is right around the corner, guys. The way to get sats back on your whole life, the Fold card, which reminds me, I've actually got a couple spins I need to catch up on. And then your automatic stack with Swan Bitcoin. Check them all out. They make this show the little audio engine that could, and they make the Bitcoin space that much more secure and accessible and easy to use. They just have good products. They're stuff that I've been using for a long time. Links in the show notes and discounts to go with all of them. Don't forget to check that out. With that, let's go ahead and jump into today's read. The second half of the report that every investor needs to hear. And it's titled, Why Every Fixed Income Investor Needs to Consider Bitcoin as Portfolio Insurance. Part 3. In the first installment of this series, I reviewed my history in the credit markets to provide context for the planned series. The intent of the second installment was to lay the groundwork for our Fulcrum Index, an index that calculates the cumulative value of credit default swap insurance on a basket of G20 sovereign nations, multiplied by their respective funded and unfunded obligations. This dynamic calculation could form the basis of a current valuation for Bitcoin, the anti-fiat. The second installment was dry, detailed, and academic. Hopefully there was some interesting stuff. At the end of the day, though, math is typically not a strong subject for most. And as for bond math, most people would rather chew glass. Too bad. Bond and credit markets make the capitalist world function. However, when we socialize losses and reward the risk takers with government-funded bailouts, the self-correcting mechanism of capitalism, creative destruction, is jeopardized. I asked my wife to read the second installment. When she was halfway through reading, she stopped and said, Two things. First, I never knew Fabozzi, editor of the Journal of Portfolio Management, gave you crap for submitting your article to two journals at the same time. And second, you are a turbo geek. With that as valuable feedback, I apologize if I geeked out on the bond markets and bond math. I hope I didn't bore too many readers. This stuff is important, and our leaders and kids need to understand the implications of credit, how to properly price credit, and ultimately, the cost of crony capitalism. The penalty for mispricing credit needs to be write-downs, not continual bailouts. In this installment, I will expand on our base footing, and take a first cut at the Fulcrum Index calculation. I will also talk about other Bitcoin valuation methodologies. The culmination of this installment, therefore, details why I believe Bitcoin is the best asymmetric trade I have seen in my 32 years of trading, and why I believe every fixed income investor needs exposure to Bitcoin in order to reduce portfolio risk. 3.1. The 2008-2009 Great Financial Crisis. My experience and fears. TARP. In the summer of 2007, the credit markets were starting to exhibit typical stresses in the system, indicating that the plumbing wasn't working properly. Equity markets were largely unaware of the true nature of the problems, except that they were being flung around as credit hedges reached for protection in the credit default swaps and equity volatility markets. It was a time of preliminary contagion, the beginning of the global financial crisis. The non-bank asset-backed commercial paper, ABCP, market in Canada, had seized after the CDPQ, $160 billion Canadian in assets at the time, the pension arm of the province of Quebec, had refused to roll their short-term paper. Concerns on subprime mortgage exposure within the financial system were rampant, and CDPQ was one of the first major players to pull the emergency brake. They had $16 billion Canadian dollars in exposure, or 10% of their assets, in asset-backed commercial paper, a financially engineered alchemy. The paper quickly went no bid, and a total of $32 billion Canadian dollars in leveraged super senior assets fell 10 points on no trade. It would ultimately trade down in price almost 80%. Two Bear Stearns hedge funds were rumored to be in big trouble due to subprime exposure, and Lehman Brothers was in a precarious spot in the funding markets. Market participants at the time will no doubt remember the famous Jim Cramer rant, when on a Sunday afternoon in early August 2007, Cramer lost his patience and called out the Fed and Ben Bernanke for being clueless to the stresses.
And these firms are going to go out of business, and he's nuts! They're nuts! They know nothing!
Watch the video here. Link will be provided in the show notes. There is a lot in here. Note the outset. Quote, as goes Bear Stearns, Bear stock at $109 per share, so goes the Dow. Quote, in the fixed income markets, we have Armageddon. And at the end, they could save us with a rate cut. Well, the Fed did cut rates, and equities rallied to all-time highs in October 2007 as credit guys who were purchasing various forms of protection reversed course and covered, thus pushing up stocks. Remember, credit is a dog, and equity markets are its tail. Equities can get whipped around with reckless abandon because the credit markets are much larger, and credit has priority of claim over the equity. However, reality soon returned. Bear Stearns' stock traded down to $2 per share in March of 2008 when it was acquired by J.P. Morgan. Subprime mortgage exposure was the culprit in the collapse of many structured products, and in September of 2008, Lehman Brothers was allowed to fail. My fear was that the system truly was on the brink of collapse. I was not the only one. In January through March 2009, it got really ugly. I rode the train every morning in the new year of 2009 wondering if it was over. Our fund was hedged and wedged, but we had counterparty risk exposure in the markets. It was a blessing that our investors had agreed to a lockup period and could not redeem their investments. Our performance was actually very good. However, sometimes that is a curse because investors are apt to, quote, sell their winners. We calculated and managed our risk exposure on a minute-by-minute basis, but things were moving around so fast. There was true fear in the markets. Any stabilization was only a pause before confidence in prices took another leg lower. We added to our hedges as the market tanked. This is an unfortunate result of delta hedging. I won't even start with the gamma component. Suffice to say, it becomes circular. Contagion builds on itself. My fund owned credit obligations in many of the largest North American banks. We were typically long the credit instruments and short the equity, a term that is referred to as capital structure arbitrage. There were relative value anomalies all through the markets. For instance, why was I able to buy TD Bank preferred shares in the US market at 40 cents on the dollar when equivalent debt in the Canadian market was trading at 90 cents? Answer, because Citibank preferreds were trading at 25 cents on the dollar. It is all relative. Americans assumed that TD Bank was baked if Citi was baked. TD Bank had zero subprime exposure. No one cared. Long-only accounts could sell TD Bank preferreds and buy Citibank preferreds. Take out 15 points. Where is Canada again? You may ask why the Canadian dollar preferreds of TD Bank, quote, held in at such a high price relative to the US dollar preferreds. The simple answer, Canadian accounts and retail investors assumed that TD Bank was too big to fail, and that at 90 cents, the return was juicy. More importantly, they were unaware of where the US dollar preferreds were trading, as the two markets had little crossover. To say it was a scary time in the markets with definite pricing inefficiencies is an understatement. Liquidity is best defined as the ability to sell in a bear market. By that definition, liquidity was non-existent. Some securities would fall 25% on one trade. Who would sell something down 25%? If funds are being redeemed and investors want cash, the fund needs to sell, regardless of the price. For that reason, many funds, quote, gated themselves, meaning redemptions were unilaterally stopped. There was panic and blood in the streets. Just when you thought things couldn't get worse, they invariably did. It was called contagion. The system was broken, and there was a de facto vote of no confidence. People didn't sell what they wanted to. They sold what they could. Selling begets selling. 3.2. True leverage in banks. The bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers was a true awakening for all market players. An institution that was deemed by some as too big to fail was not rescued by the government. The cascading credit crisis became even more real as people who had assets custodied at Lehman Brothers, as well as players who had purchased credit default swaps protection from Lehman Brothers, were suddenly exposed to risks as a major counterparty failed. Lehman Brothers' downfall was that it had been the largest player in the mortgage-backed securities business, and it had a residual portfolio of mortgage-backed security risk which it was not able to lay off on other risk players. This mortgage-backed security risk had a notional value of $85 billion U.S. dollars. This was equal to 4 times its book value of equity. Financial market players are very leveraged, and equity cushions are surprisingly low relative to the true risks. It is for this reason that I often say, banks are regularly insolvent on a mark-to-market basis. My experience in 1988 was being repeated again in 2009. Commercial banks are typically 25 times levered on their lending books. That is to say, for every $100 in loans, they have $4 of equity and $96 of deposits and subordinated debt. How then do they maintain such high credit ratings? The implied government backstops. This is a huge danger. However, these backstops do not ensure that a levered institution can continue to fund itself. When confidence ebbs, depositors run for the exits, and a bank run generally ensures that a weak bank needs to run to the arms of a strong suitor. But what if all potential suitors are themselves dealing with a crisis in confidence? The global financial crisis just transferred leverage from the financial system onto the balance sheets of sovereign nations. The Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, was the beginning of financial acronyms that facilitated this risk transfer. And then in 2020, with the COVID crisis in full swing, more acronyms and the high likelihood that many financial institutions would again be insolvent. But the Fed ran into the market again, this time with the same old QE programs, but also new programs that would purchase corporate credit and even high-yield bonds. As stated in Section 2.6, the reason that the Fed decided to endorse a credit facility to purchase high-yield bonds was due to four credits who were, and still are, on the cusp of becoming fallen angels. Contagion comes at you in many ways in a crisis of confidence, and this selling pressure would have overwhelmed the high-yield markets and led to further increases in equity volatility. It was a game of whack-a-mole. 3.3. Administered rates, inflation, government bonds, and sovereign credit default swaps. The new paradigm. Quantitative easing by central banks tends to focus on the, quote, administered level of interest rates, some call it manipulation, and the shape of the yield curve, using targeted treasury bond purchases, sometimes called, quote, yield curve control, or YCC. Under these extreme conditions, it is difficult to get an open market rate for a quasi-risk-free hurdle rate. Moreover, due to central bank interference, true inflation risks can be compressed, as well as true credit risks. For this reason, we implore market participants to follow the credit default swap rates on sovereign governments for a much better indication of the true risks that are brewing in the system. One glaring example in my mind is the following. USA, AA+ rated by S&P, 5-year credit default swaps equals 14 basis points. Canada, AAA rated, equals 36 basis points, trades like a single A. Portugal, BBB, 40 basis points, ECB support. Even though Canada has the highest credit rating of the three, the market is telling us otherwise. Do the Canadian politicians and local MMTers have any idea? No way. There is truth in markets. Do not follow subjective credit opinions blindly. Falsely rated AAA credit tranches were a major cause of the unraveling of structured credit products in the global financial crisis. Forced selling due to downgrades of previously, quote, overrated structures and their respective credit tranches was contagious. When one structure collapsed, others followed. Selling begets selling. For a complete list of credit default swaps by nation, see here. Link will also be in the show notes. Section 3.4. What is fiat and the problems with a fiat obligation?
Let us halt right here and take a break for our sponsor. Now, in my opinion, a good hardware wallet for your Bitcoin savings is not a nice to have. It is a must have. The most important thing you can and should do in Bitcoin is hold your own keys. I hope you will never hear me contradict that. That is why I recommend the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. And for those who have not gone full sovereign with a hardware wallet yet, the Bitbox O2 kind of shines as a simple one that's simple and intuitive to use. You know, any hardware wallet is better than none, and there's lots of great options. But if you want one that's easy to use, that's secure, that is built by Bitcoin devs, and has a 5% off discount, actually, with code GUY, the Bitbox O2 is the one to check out. I'm a big fan myself. I know you've heard me talk about it. And maybe I'm just kind of a geek, but I like the fact that it doesn't have buttons, but it just knows where on the side of the device you're tapping it. I still kind of get like, man, that's cool when I use it. But anyway, check it out at guysolon.com/bitbox. Again, 5% off everything in your cart with code GUY. With that, let's jump back into this section. Section 3.4. What is fiat and the problems with a fiat obligation? The term fiat is Latin for let it be done. In other words, trust the decree of the central banks. Quote, fiat money is a government-issued currency that isn't backed by a commodity, such as gold. Fiat money gives central banks greater control over the economy because they can control how much money is printed. Most modern paper currencies are fiat currencies. Wikipedia. In the great financial crisis of 2008 and 9, there was a huge amount of debt that was written down, but there was also a huge amount that was bailed out and transferred to government books, and thus are now govy obligations. According to the Institute for International Finance, in 2017, total global debt to global GDP was 3.3x. Global GDP, then at $67 trillion, has grown a little in the last 3 years, but global debt has grown much faster. I now estimate that the debt-to-GDP ratio is over 4x. At this ratio, a dangerous mathematical certainty emerges. If we assume the average coupon on the debt is 3%, likely low, then the global economy needs to grow at a rate of 12% just to keep the tax base in line with the organically growing coupon obligation debt balance. This does not include the increased deficits that are contemplated for battling the recessionary impacts of the COVID crisis. In a debt-to-GDP spiral, the fiat currency becomes the error term. Printing more fiat is the only solution that balances the growth in the numerator relative to the denominator. When more fiat is printed, the value of the outstanding fiat is debased. It is circular. Error terms imply an impurity in the formula. Therefore, when you lend a government money at time zero, you are highly likely to get your money back at time X. However, the value of that money will be debased. That is a mathematical certainty. Assuming there is no contagion that leads to a default, the debt contract has been satisfied. But who is the fool? Moreover, with interest rates at historic lows, the contractual returns on the obligations will certainly not keep pace with the consumer price index, let alone true inflation as measured by other less manipulated baskets like the Chapwood Index. And notice we have not even mentioned the return that would be required for a fair reward due to the credit risk. While a default by a G20 sovereign in the short term is still a lowish probability event, investors still need to be rewarded for the risk of potential default. That is not currently happening in the environment of manipulated yield curves. There are over 180 fiat currencies, and over 100 will likely fail before a G20 country does. However, credit default swap rates are likely to continue to widen. Contagion and the domino effect are real risks. Remember the global financial crisis. Investors need to be rewarded for the increased systematic credit risk, as well as idiosyncratic credit risk. How? Own Bitcoin as a hedge to credit default swaps widening in sovereigns. Quote, fiat always return to their intrinsic value. Zero. Voltaire. Section 3.5. Bitcoin is default insurance on a basket of sovereigns and fiats. The Fulcrum Index. I believe that Bitcoin is anti-fiat. As such, it can be thought of as default insurance on a basket of sovereigns and fiats. This concept has a value that is fairly easily computed, and it will be a dynamic calculation, since the input variables are continuously changing. Let's use the USA as a sample calculation. The federal government has over $25 trillion US dollars in outstanding debt. According to Jeffrey Gundlach, it also has $157 trillion of unfunded liabilities in Medicare and Medicaid obligations. These are not contractual obligations. However, anyone who is counting on a semblance of healthcare from the government is counting on this aid and needs to protect themselves should the safety net collapse. So for the USA, the total of funded and unfunded obligations is $180 trillion. A USA 5-year credit default swap at 14 basis points multiplied by the total obligations is $250 billion U.S. dollars. If the CDS widens to 35 basis points in the 5-year to match Canada, the value increases to $630 billion U.S. dollars. This calculation uses a fixed 5-year term. The outstanding weighted average obligation is longer than 5 years due to Medicare and Medicaid. Consequently, we have decided to use a term of 15 years for the United States. There is no 15-year credit default swap market, but we can calculate the implied spread using a tenor calculation. The implied 15-year CDS spread for the USA is 45 basis points. In other words, just using the USA as one component in the G20 basket, we have a valuation of $180 trillion U.S. dollars times 45 basis points, which equals $810 billion U.S. dollars. I am currently constructing the Fulcrum Index with the help of Sean Cumbie. He is an experienced credit default swap trader who successfully hedged some very large naked long credit positions for a major Canadian bank prior to the global financial crisis. Sean is a wizard at credit default swaps, tenor calculations, and modeling. Our first cut calculation of the current Fulcrum Index is between $2 trillion U.S. dollars and $3 trillion for the risk basket. Note that the USA is between 1/4 and 1/3 of that amount. If we assume that the $2 to $3 trillion is a valid benchmark for the value of Bitcoin, divide that range by 18.6 million coins, and we obtain a value between $108,000 and $160,000 US per coin. Again, this is a dynamic calculation, somewhat subjective, but a very valid benchmark using other clearly observed credit default swap markets and disclosures. Also, since there is no counterparty risk with Bitcoin, there is further validation in the calculation. If you are a fixed income investor with above-mentioned fiat risk exposure to contractual sovereign obligations, Bitcoin can be viewed as cheap portfolio insurance. Together with the asymmetric return profile of Bitcoin detailed in Section 3.6, the traditional 60-40 equity bond portfolio can be meaningfully enhanced with an added exposure to Bitcoin. Expected portfolio returns are increased, while actual portfolio risk is decreased. Furthermore, with yield to maturities in credit products at historical lows, pension funds with prescribed rates of return that are calculated using more generous return assumptions for fixed income will have large difficulty hitting their return assumptions. Many pension funds will have to examine their funded, quote, status more closely. Section 3.6. Other Bitcoin Valuation Methodologies. Our Fulcrum Index is one of many calculations that should be performed in order to evaluate potential price outcomes for Bitcoin. I will advance two others. One, Bitcoin versus the market cap of physical gold. And two, Bitcoin as a proportion of total global financial assets, including real estate. The market cap of physical gold is $10 trillion U.S. dollars. If we divide that amount by 21 million coins, the result is $475,000 per coin. According to the Institute for International Finance, total global financial assets in 2017, including real estate, was $900 trillion. If Bitcoin were to capture 5% of that market, $45 trillion divided by 21 million is 2.14 million per coin. At 10% market share, it is over $4 million per coin. These are huge numbers. Also, they show the asymmetric return possibilities of the Bitcoin price curve. The likelihood is certainly low, but it is not zero. In reality, the probability compared to the price distribution is a continuous distribution bounded at zero with a very long tail to the right. Section 3.7. Investing in Bitcoin, probability analysis and expected value. Expected value analysis has always been a key calculation in my risk management toolbox. Let's do a simple analysis using the numbers calculated in sections 3.5 and 3.6. We will formulate a simple distribution that has only five outcomes: Bitcoin worth zero, Bitcoin worth $135,000 per coin, worth $475,000 per coin, $2.1 million per coin, and worth $4 million per coin. For example purposes, we assign arbitrary probabilities to each outcome to reflect a subjective distribution as follows: price of zero with 75% probability, $135,000 midpoint of Fulcrum index range with 15% probability, $475,000 with 7% probability, $2.1 million with 2% probability, and $4 million with 1% probability. The expected value outcome of this example is $136,000 per coin. Given recent trading levels on Bitcoin, if you believe this to be your base case expected value calculation, you would be buying with both hands. For the record, my base case is substantially higher than this, but you must do your own research. Always do your own research. Bitcoin is currently trading under $40,000 per coin. Sure looks cheap to my expected value distribution. However, there is no certainty I am right. And this is not financial advice to run out and buy Bitcoin. I am presenting a valuation methodology that has served me well in my 32-year career. I have been called a kook many times. I am fine with that. If the facts change, my investing decisions and valuation models change. Others will argue that Bitcoin is too volatile. I quote Bill Miller, "Volatility is the price of return. No volatility, no return." And finally, given its asymmetric return distribution, I believe, quote, "It is more risky to have zero exposure to Bitcoin than it is to have a 5% portfolio weight. If you are not long Bitcoin, you are irresponsibly short." Don't overthink this. Lower your time preference. Bitcoin is the purest form of monetary energy and is portfolio insurance for all fixed income investors. In my opinion, it is cheap on most rational expected value outcomes. You can never be 100% certain. The only thing that is a certainty is fiat debasing in a debt spiral. Hedge the global fiat Ponzi. In a debt to GDP spiral, the fiat currency is the error term. All fiats are melting ice cubes. The rate of decay is relative, but all fiats melt. It is only math. I believe there is a real chance that Bitcoin becomes the reserve asset of the world. The tipping point, or fulcrum point for that event, is when Bitcoin is adopted as a global unit of account for the trade of energy products. When oil, natural gas, and electricity are priced in Bitcoin, Bitcoin will supplant the US dollar as world reserve currency and asset. This will be the topic for the next and final installment. For now, I leave you with the following picture from the New York Times in December 1921, and Henry Ford calling for an energy currency that would stop wars. Makes you think. Bitcoin equals math plus code equals truth. Part 4. All right, another quick break for our sponsor, and we will jump back in on part 4. Now, I feel like I am way behind on my plans for Bitcoin 2022, but I did just yesterday get my Airbnb booked, and I got my tickets like the day after Bitcoin 2021, so I've had those like forever. So I am at least ahead of you guys who have been putting it off. And don't pretend like you're not out there. You know you've been procrastinating. Well, it's getting to crunch time, ladies and gents. If you want to attend the greatest Bitcoin conference ever, if you want to conquer Miami with us, now is the time to pull the trigger. We are less than 2 months away. At least I'm feeling the stress. Lots of hotels are filling up. That's kind of what got me to like, okay, I gotta sort this out. They're disappearing fast. I don't think you understand just how much space 30,000 Bitcoiners will take up. 10% off your tickets with code GUYSWAN, all one word and all caps, because it means you're yelling it into the discount box. Snag your tickets today. Get ready. This year's going to be absolutely batshit crazy. And just check out the conference details, actually, at b.tc/conference. You know, how do you get a domain name like that? b.tc. Anyway, b.tc/conference and code GUYSWAN saves you some precious sats, so don't forget it. Okay, let's jump back in. Part 4. In the first 3 installments of this series, I reviewed my history in the credit markets and introduced the Fulcrum Index, an index that calculates the cumulative value of credit default swap insurance on a basket of G20 sovereign nations, multiplied by their respective funded and unfunded obligations. This dynamic calculation forms the basis of a current valuation for Bitcoin, the anti-fiat. This methodology determined that a fair value for Bitcoin is between $110,000 per coin and $160,000 per coin today. At a current trading level of approximately $40,000 per coin, the Fulcrum Index would indicate that Bitcoin is cheap to fair value. As such, given that every fixed income portfolio is exposed to sovereign default risk, it would make sense for every fixed income investor to own Bitcoin as portfolio insurance. As sovereign credit default swap spreads widen, reflecting increased default risk, the intrinsic value of Bitcoin will increase, and this will be the dynamic that allows the Fulcrum Index to continually revalue Bitcoin. Moreover, on an expected value basis, Bitcoin is also cheap. And with each day that the Bitcoin network survives and gets stronger, the left-hand side, or tail, of the probability distribution continues to decrease, while the right-hand side asymmetry is maintained. Accordingly, I state for a final time, Bitcoin is the best asymmetric trade I have ever seen in my 32 years of trading, and I believe every fixed income investor needs exposure to Bitcoin. Having zero exposure to Bitcoin is riskier than having a 5% portfolio weight. Section 4.1. Feedback from prior installments. I have received some valuable feedback from readers. I thank you for the kind words, as well as the questions. I paraphrase the main question as follows, quote, "If countries can just print, they can never default. So why would credit default swap spreads widen?" I provide 2 examples below. Firstly, the same thing was said about Lehman Brothers having an implied backstop by the U.S. government and that it would never fail. The Great Financial Crisis showed us otherwise, and the CDS spread of 9 basis points, $9,000 per annum to insure $10 million of debt, that Lehman Brothers protection was offered at in 2006 turned out to be a very valuable insurance policy. The credit default swaps of other financial players also widened in lockstep as contagion spread through the markets. And while other players survived, no event of default occurred, the credit default swap protection was still a valuable policy that could have been sold to crystallize the value of the protection. The same dynamic will apply to the correlations of sovereign credit default swap spreads. The bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers was a true awakening for all market players. An institution that was deemed by some as too big to fail was not rescued by the government. The cascading credit crisis became even more real as people who had assets custodied at Lehman Brothers, as well as players who had purchased credit default swap protection from Lehman Brothers, were suddenly exposed to risks as a major counterparty failed. Contagion. Secondly, sovereign credits do default, even though they can print money. Remember the LDC, or Lesser Developed Countries, crisis in 1988, or Venezuela in 2020, where fiat is shoveled to the curb as garbage. It becomes a crisis of confidence, and existing holders of government debt do not roll their obligations, and instead demand cash. They can, quote, print the cash, but if it's shoveled to the curb, we would all agree that that is a de facto default. Section 4.2. An example of credit default swap contagion. In previous installments, I laid out the leverage in the financial system and why the unwinding of this leverage is what ultimately leads to crises exploding. The following example is particularly timely, since we have just experienced a similar event in the GameStop affair. GameStop caused leverage to unwind, which cascaded through the equity markets and was reflected in increased equity volume and associated pressure on credit spreads. It happened as follows. Up to 15 major hedge funds were all rumored to be in trouble as their first month results were horrible. They were down between 10% and 40% to start the 2021 year. Cumulatively, they controlled about $100 billion US in assets. However, they also employed leverage, sometimes as high as 10 times levered. I quote from the Bear Traps report, January 23, 2021. Quote, "Our 21 Lehman systemic indicators are screaming higher. The inmates are running the asylum. When the margin clerk comes walking by your desk, it is a very unpleasant experience. You don't just sell your losers, you must sell your winners. Nearly everything must go to raise precious cash. Here lie the problems with central bankers. Academics are often clueless about systemic risk, even when it is right under their noses. The history books are filled with these lessons." Consider a hedgie that uses 10 times leverage and sells protection on a basket of sovereign credits, quote, "to collect that fee premium and generate a high leverage-aided ROI. The hedgie has been a consistent seller, even as spreads have widened. The market runs to the hedgie for more protection. They sell more. Then the margin clerk walks by, and suddenly the only seller of protection needs to reverse course to raise cash. They are now also a buyer in a market where there are only buyers. Spreads explode." In the following exhibit, the title says it all. Quote, "Despite active degrossing, fund leverage remains elevated." This is what happens in an era of low rates. Costs of borrow are low. Leverage is used to chase yield and make yield-producing assets attractive on a leverage-adjusted basis. Quote, "High-yield bonds have never been lower yield. They moved under 4% for the first time in history." See Appendix 1 for discussion on this absurdity for anyone who owns a high-yield mutual fund. What does all this leverage do? It increases the risk of the inevitable unwind being extremely painful, while ensuring that the unwind fuels the contagion. A default does not have to occur in order for a credit default swap contract to make money. The widening of spreads will cause the owner of the contract to incur a mark-to-market gain, and conversely, the seller of the contract to incur a mark-to-market loss. Spreads will widen to reflect an increase in the potential for default, and there will be a correlation between widening sovereign spreads as systemic risks absorb the leverage unwind. Roger Lowenstein's bestseller, When Genius Failed, The Rise and Fall of Long-Term Capital Management, is a must-read for all risk managers and market historians. LTCM was a huge hedge fund that employed two Nobel Prize-winning economists and a team of elite traders. Their pocket strategy was essentially to sell volatility and enhance returns using leverage. When Wall Street banks needed to purchase options, buy volatility, they went to LTCM. LTCM sold. When volatility widened, they sold more. And as the street needed more protection, they sold more. At one point, they remark, quote, "Markets are broken. Volatility is at 99% confidence intervals, according to our models. Problem was, their models were based on 7 years of historical data. Wow! Nobel Prize winners, eh? 7 years of data. What a farce. Yet the quote, bank of volatility almost brought down the street. LTCM was bailed out in 1997, and the party soon continued. Socializing losses has enduring consequences, as the can was once again kicked down the road. Risk happens fast. Section 4.3. Concluding remarks. Bitcoin is the purest form of monetary energy, and is portfolio insurance for all fixed income investors. In my opinion, it is cheap on most rational expected value outcomes. You can never be 100% certain. The only thing that is a certainty is fiat debasing in a debt spiral. Hedge the global fiat Ponzi. In a debt to GDP spiral, the fiat currency is the error term. All fiats are melting ice cubes. The rate of decay is relative, but all fiats melt. It is only math. I believe there is a real chance that Bitcoin becomes the reserve asset of the world. The tipping point for that event is when Bitcoin is adopted as a global unit of account for the trade of energy products. When oil, natural gas, and electricity are priced in Bitcoin, Bitcoin will supplant the US dollar as world reserve currency and asset. The following picture is from the New York Tribune in December of 1921, and Henry Ford calling for, quote, an energy currency that would stop wars. I believe it is logical for countries who are selling their valuable energy resources in return for worthless fiat money to move from the fiat-based US dollar as a reserve asset to Bitcoin. Digital energy stored on the world's largest and most secure computer network, in return for energy that has been stored as fossil fuels, or hydropower, or solar power. It is a natural evolution, built upon the first law of thermodynamics, conservation of energy. Quote, Bitcoin mining will be the most profitable use of energy in human history that does not need to be located close to human settlement. Once the mining is built, the human settlement will follow. Ross Stevens. Cheap energy has always resulted in human flourishing via increased productivity. Many Bitcoin critics argue that Bitcoin wastes energy. I contend that Bitcoin consumes energy waste. From flare gas projects to wasted energy resources that are too far from the human settlement, you can only efficiently transport electricity about 500 miles. Bitcoin mining can actually be used to stabilize the electricity grid, as a system that is built for overcapacity or peak loads can be more efficiently employed with miners that bridge the power gap. Bitcoin mining increases the revenue and risk return prospects for new energy projects. The Canadian energy patch would benefit greatly from these new revenue sources. Capital can be allocated more effectively. Entire communities and provinces can benefit. Trickle-down effects such as ASIC chip manufacturers returning to North American soil due to the increased demand for miners can also be put into the playbook. Quote, money is a technology for making our work, time, and energy expended today available for consumption tomorrow. Hat tip Ross Stevens. I added my own twist. By that definition, Bitcoin is the purest form of money and store of value that mankind has invented. Choose your store of value wisely. Bitcoin equals math plus code. The code is open source. Don't mess with open source software. You will lose every time. Jack Mallers. Risk happens fast. Bitcoin is the hedge. Thanks for reading, and thanks to Tom and Nick and the Rockstar team for teaching me the ropes. Sincerely, Greg Foss. Reach me on Twitter at @FossGregFoss, concerned but optimistic Canadian. Man, that was a monster. Such a great piece. Really details out so much of the real nit and gritty of what Greg Foss has laid out in so many excellent interviews, and really kind of crystallizes the entire argument. And, you know, there's a number of different things that I don't really have a whole long time for a guy's take, and I know you've heard me rant about one of the issues that he brings up in this piece that I think is one of the most important things to stress is the idea that the cost, the punishment for participating in a free market irresponsibly, for leveraging yourself, for not properly setting up your positions, for printing debt out of thin air, that is the most important part of the free market. That is the most important part of the error correction mechanism that wipes the market free, that cleans the market of bad behavior, that wipes out the irresponsible, poisonous institutions that are destroying value, because that's what that means. If they cannot make it through when the wind blows, then they are institutions that are destroying value. They are not producing things in the economy. That has become our entire financial system. I mean, he talks about in 1997 when LTCM got bailed out, and these contagions, and I don't mean contagion in the context that he's talking about of the credit risk, but this poisonous behavior within the financial markets of over-leveraging, of using the cheap artificial debt in order to get higher yield, and continuing to push the financial markets into weaker and higher and higher risk territory, where any sort of fluctuation would just tumble the entire thing down, like just a huge house of cards. This didn't just happen overnight. This happened from decade after decade after decade of bailouts and propping up the system, propping up the leverage that should be wiped out, that should be cleaned out of the system and fire sold back to the public. The CEOs who should have gone out of business or ended up in jail or never ever run a financial institution ever again in their entire life because of the unbelievable, spectacular disaster of a shitstorm they were responsible for, they got bonuses. They got bonuses because they were bailed out. The government has disallowed the market from fixing this bullshit for 50 years. When Greg Foss says that the reason it is riskier to not be in Bitcoin is because how else are you going to hedge the fact that the entire system is fucked? How are you going to hedge that? What is your exit strategy if all of the major institutions are on the verge of being liquidated? What is your exit if the only way that any of those institutions actually stay solvent is if the government bails them out again and prints tens of trillions of dollars again, which is going to have to be bigger than the last time they flooded the entire system with money? He says it over and over again. It is just math. What is your hedge against the fiat Ponzi? And, you know, I think this is why Bitcoin's valuation is so low, or Bitcoin's current price and current market understanding is so ignorant, because one of the most important reasons Bitcoin exists, one of the most important value propositions for the Bitcoin system, is as a hedge against the collapse of the financial system. It is the fact that it is a counterparty free way to hold, maintain, and move value that is completely external to the entire global financial system's plumbing. If every single pipe in the global financial house gets clogged and breaks and starts leaking, Bitcoin will continue to work perfectly fine. Forget that Bitcoin is incredibly superior money. Forget that Bitcoin is apolitical. Forget that Bitcoin is programmable and can literally build an open source financial system on top of it without 90% of these middlemen and the pointless arbitrary shit and fees that they take in the middle. Forget that it has all of this innovative and profound value in and of itself. Merely as a hedge, merely as a credit default swap on the fact that the sovereign nations of this world are in debt at historic levels, and that we are literally tied to each other's fate. One big collapse and it all goes falling down. You have to have savings to have buffers. You have to have real liquid assets and stored capital in order to not get demolished by the cascading debt next door. We have packed everything as closely together as possible. We have removed every single buffer. We have removed every single savings account, and we have replaced it with leverage through decade and decade and decade of manipulation and false prices. What is your exit strategy if that shit goes sideways? What if this isn't a special time in history? What if every single other time that this happened in history, to a lesser degree, no doubt, and when it blew up spectacularly, what if that's exactly the same thing that's happening now? Does it feel like everything's on sound footing? Does it seem like everything's going great? I mean, if it does to you, then maybe just put everything into mutual funds. Maybe ride your 10% inflation on your 4% yield to maturity. I mean, maybe you're a masochist. Maybe you like that kind of thing. Sure, go to town. But if you don't want to go down with the ship, if you don't want to watch your value bleed, and you haven't allocated a little bit to Bitcoin, ask yourself what your hedge is. What's your alternative? If we have another massive sovereign credit crisis, we have potential default of some of the largest Western nations. Do you have portfolio insurance? I hope you do. And if you don't, maybe you should think about getting some. I hear this thing called Bitcoin is very useful for that. And you can hear all about it. You can learn everything there is to know about it at Bitcoin Audible. What do you know? That's this show. Okay, guys, we're out. I just said I wasn't going to do a rant, and it instantly turned into a rant. Anyway, let's go ahead and close this out. Thank you to our sponsors for Bitcoin Audible. We got the Bitbox hardware wallet, the Bitcoin 2022 conference. I'm so jacked about this. The Fold card, Sats Back on Life, and Swan Bitcoin for stacking every day, every week, every month, all the time automatically straight to your keys. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to follow Greg Foss on Twitter and bug him to come on the show so we can have this chat. Excited to follow up this piece and get him on the show to pick his brain about it. Enjoy your week. I'll catch you tomorrow with another episode of Bitcoin Audible. Until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.